Welcome to this week's episode of the Space Explorer Podcast. I'm Seth Krakowski, and with me this week is Jared Bass. Jared, how are you?
Good. It's been a tiring week, but doing good.
Yeah, we've had a decent amount of things happen this week. Starting last week, we've had start off with Blue Origin. Blue Origin had one of their Pathfinders for New Glenn come in, which we don't see much of. We don't see Blue Origin really do anything ever.
Yeah, they're a very quiet company, and typically you only find out when they're planning to do stuff if you see FCC licenses or TFRs go up.
Yeah, they have Van Horn, their little section over there in Van Horn, Texas, which you see pop up TFRs, and you're like, oh, cool, stuff is happening, maybe, possibly. But they have this huge, huge facility over in Titusville, which is right across from the visitor complex. And it's like they're very quiet, but they're also very loud at the same time.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a very like overbearing presence when you go out and drive, because they're not like a lot of like SpaceX. I think the Blue Origin facility down here by KSC is in some ways pretty similar to SpaceX's operations in Boca Chica, just because while everything's happening inside, you're literally like right there next to the buildings and stuff.
Yeah. The only difference is that they actually have like no stopping signs on the side of the road. I don't even know where the people sit, because all of a sudden, like, it was not last weekend, the weekend before. I can't remember who tweeted the photo. I think it was
Stephen C. Smith.
Yes, right. And all of a sudden, like, I don't know where he was sitting, and all of a sudden there's a photo of the door open in one of the facilities. And every time I go up there or go down there now, I always drive past to see what's up there, see what's new. And he must have just gotten super lucky. And all of a sudden the door is open, and you can see a little bit of the Pathfinder for New Glenn, which is huge.
Oh yeah. Having driven past that facility, seeing the door open and just knowing the scale of that building, that thing is huge.
Yeah. So they had like kind of the core stage, kind of like the first stage, I think. Well, it looked like the first stage, kind of sitting there, as well as some of the fins, which I think are the fins at the top or the bottom.
I think they have it on both. There are definitely fins closer to the top that you see in that picture.
Yeah, because I know there's the fins at the top that will act as like as what SpaceX uses the grid fins for. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know if they have grid fins at the bottom as well. But yeah, that's basically, I think it was the top section that we saw, those top fins. And yeah, so basically this is the Pathfinder that they're going to be using for whatever tests they have at their launch complex, which looks to be nearing completion as well. They have both. I don't know if they plan on building more than two lightning towers. Do you know?
No. So from the permits of the pad, there's really only like one designated lightning tower. Of course, the like access tower they're building next to it is also going to act as one, just because of how tall it is. But according to the permits that I've seen, that it was only like one actual lightning tower.
Gotcha. Yeah. So they have that. They have like the launch mount system, I think, arrived like a few months ago, and they're building up like the hangars and all this stuff that we've been able to see, just from the beach and from satellite photos or helicopter photos that people get.
You can see Blue Origin's orbital launch pad from pretty much anywhere on the Space Coast.
Easily. It's the easiest thing to find. Every time I'm down there, when people like, when we have launches or other things happening, they always ask, is that 39A? And I'm like, no, you can't see that. That's just Blue Origin wanting to be prominent on the Space Coast skyline, pretty much.
The crazy thing to think about is that New Glenn is almost going to be as tall as that access tower, basically.
It's insane. Like, I think one of the best viewing spots for that is going to be the beach in Jetty Park. Like, yeah. That's the only, and that's really the only launch pad that's going to give really good viewing is for Jetty Park and the beach. Yeah. The rest are all covered.
Yeah. And Exploration Tower, too, if they do launch events again, that's going to be
I can't even imagine. That's going
to
be insane.
The sad part is that Exploration Tower doesn't allow photographers to have like tripods and stuff up there. So that's a one downside. But
I brought my tripod up there. Well, maybe not for launch events. I've never been in there for a launch event, but I've been out there just by myself and I brought a tripod.
Oh, yeah. When there's no launches happening, you can bring your tripods and stuff. But when they have like the separate ticketed launch events up there, they don't want people bringing tripods.
Gotcha. Yeah. So the pad, so New Glenn pad test should be coming out, I think, in the next couple months, people have said. And then according to Blue Origin, they're still slated for a launch this year.
Yeah. And I heard earlier today that we are potentially expecting that date for at least, I think the implication of the tweet was that it would be like their planned first attempt for the orbital launch could come out as soon as this week.
Wow. I missed that one. I did not see that one. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Cause they've been saying 2021 was the year. Well, it was 2020 and now it's 2021. So yeah, we're looking forward to seeing that halfway launch this year. The other thing that we happily saw this week, some of that's probably taken over the entire, I mean, that's literally what all the posts have been the last couple of days, have been Perseverance and the landing that it had last Thursday, right?
Oh, yeah, Perseverance. Yeah, how could I forget?
Yeah, I'm always like, is it Wednesday or Thursday? Yeah, it's Thursday. And it, like always, JPL, NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which builds, pretty much they build all the cool stuff for NASA, knocked it out of the park again, like they usually do with a perfect landing. Second time they've used the Sky Crane landing, or I think a lot of us call it the party trick.
The descent stage Sky Crane maneuver.
Yeah, so they had, the coverage is crazy this year. I mean, NASA stepped up their game, I mean, in the past couple of years dramatically for covering their live events. But you had a farming simulator stream, right?
Yeah, recently been playing that with some friends, and we're just like, we were already likely going to be playing it anyway, so just why not?
Yeah, it was funny. I tuned in. It's like, it's just you're streaming, you're playing Farming Simulator, and you have like kind of the NASA eyes, which is their like three D like simulation of the universe, not universe, solar system, and all of their spacecraft up. And then I think later on you had the actual like audio up for that was hilarious. I thought that was really funny. And I had like all of my screens, I had my vertical screen with TweetDeck like normal. Like I had the NASA eyes, and then like their one of their not the mainstream, but I actually was watching the
clean feed.
They had so many different feeds. So they had a clean feed of the HQ, which I had up for the audio, just because I like Mission Control audio way more than commentators. But they also had then like the mainstream with their commentators and guests on and interviews for like a few hours beforehand and afterwards. Then they also had something different, which I've never seen them do before, which was a VR stream.
Yeah, that's a relatively new thing that they've been doing for these type of events.
You don't need VR glass. I don't have VR goggles. I just put it up on my stream because it actually, so it was, they had two 360 cameras, one in the, deep space network mission control area. And then one in like where they have the mission control area during like the entry, descent, landing and all that stuff.
Yeah. So they have that like EDL room off to the side from the main control.
And they were switched back and forth between the two, just like every 20, 30 seconds. But if you look kind of like slightly up, they had the mainstream going. And then to the side, they had also the NASA eyes simulation going as well in real time. So like you had all three pretty much in one. And it was you had the audio from the mainstream going, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I just muted it. I'll just look around. It was so much fun because you can see like the clean feed, someone's talking, and then that was obviously less delayed than the more produced streams, so you can like go in the 360 and like look right at that person and see what they're doing. It was really cool. I honestly wish they would do that more. I wish SpaceX would do that, honestly. Like that would be really cool to see in their mission control room, like during crewed launches.
Mm-hmm. Or just having a 360 camera out at the pad that you could be on live stream or something. Oh, I think that would be cool.
That would be amazing. I would love that. How nervous were you getting up to the landing? Because I've gotten nervous for launches, but like most of these events, I don't really get nervous for. I was freaking out today, last Thursday.
I wasn't like a launch nervous, because it's like you knew something was going to happen. You knew they were either going to successfully land or they were going to slam into the surface going hundreds of meters per second. But it definitely did get tense as we were going up and watching on that animation they had. That wasn't like NASA Eyes, but the actual like different program they had running the simulation from the live telemetry, and just seeing on the top right of the different like orbiters receiving like awaiting data or receiving data, and just seeing those kind of pop in and out of receiving or awaiting data, that there were some tense moments there where it seemed like it's like, oh, it seems like we should be getting something right now, but we're not.
Yeah. And for those that don't know, like this, so there's an 11-minute delay between Mars and Earth, and it takes 7 minutes for the entry, descent, and landing from entry to landing, pretty much takes 7 minutes. And one of the I can't remember his name, but I remember President Obama calling him the Mohawk guy during Curiosity's landing, and he works on Europa Clipper now. He worked on Curiosity before, and he tweeted out, goes, all right, Perseverance should be landed by now, one way or another. So we're just going to wait and see now. And I'm like freaking out, like, oh my God, it's right. It's landed already. We just don't know.
Yeah. Just like, it's like, I've been hanging out for here for a little bit. And it's like, you guys just catching up.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it had a great landing. And then we got to see Monday. Finally, they kind of showed a sneak peek of some of the cameras that they put on, some of the FLIR off the shelf cameras that they bought for the document, the landing for the first time. Gave us a sneak peek of that Friday, and then, which is something they don't usually do, but they pretty much withheld all the photos until they got everything and the video all downloaded from the rover until Monday when they released it. They had 128 photos, I think, on the raw images that morning. By the time like the press conference ended, where they showed the video and the images and the sound, there was like over 4,000.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And there was even more there was a couple hundred more this morning. They seem mostly to be like EDL pictures from what I looked at, but yeah, the floodgates were just open after that.
Yeah. So there were six cameras, three pointed up on the back shell, which covers the rover, that pointed up towards the parachute. One of those failed to record after the mortar fired. The mortar, which will actually, I didn't know they use a mortar. Makes sense.
It's an explosive, yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense but like the way they just described it and then watching some of the test videos, like, yeah, that thing is a powerful machine. Like, that thing is like not like your normal parachute deployer. And so when that fired, one of the cameras stopped working. So the other two still captured great video and images. Yeah. Then they had one on the back shell pointed down. Right. No, they had one.
No, it was on the descent stage.
On the descent stage. It's a sky crane, pretty much, pointed down towards the rover. One on top of the rover pointed up, and then one on the bottom of the rover pointing down. And kind of got like a whole, pretty much covered like pretty much all your angles for the descent, which was still mind numbing. I think. Like, I think I've watched it about 6-7 times by now.
But yeah, there's some points. It's very cool. The part I'm most fascinated about is when they go from the being in the back shell with the parachute to being under the powered descent, and just seeing how this like how it travels, the smoothness just changes, because you go back and forth from this kind of rocking, turning, twisting, to you detach, and all of a sudden you just got this like smooth, like almost like interpolated image, rather than this thing that's like under rocket power coming down.
Yeah. And I, for some reason, I guess it makes sense. The fuel that they use burns clear, but like in their, they said in their, I think they said in the press conference that, in the animation, one of the artists said, well, they won't know that it's not fire. Like, people who watch this won't understand that it burns clear, so they always put the exhaust in the animations.
Yeah.
And now we have video where there's no exhaust, and it looks weird, but also it makes sense.
Yeah. It's a monopropellant. The monopropellant engine's denaturing hydrazine. So, like, the exhaust is, like, hydrogen.
Yeah, and it just burns. And also, the atmosphere is so thin. It probably also expands out real quickly, unlike the animation. So it's awesome now that we actually have video of that working, which is the first time that anyone's ever seen that work, too, which is crazy that even the engineers who designed it never got to see it work until this year.
Yeah.
And got that working. And I love, my favorite view is actually of I love it when it goes, they have the side by side of the camera on the bottom of the sky crane and the camera on the top of the rover. Mm-hmm. You can see it like rolled, you can see it go down. All of a sudden they cut the cables and it flies away. Like, I really hope someone goes in there. Like, I hope they drop like the raw video that you can just download and just like tweak it and get like some of that, some of the dust as much as that cleared away so you can see more of it. But oh, it's so cool.
It's like, given the amount of pictures being uploaded, you could probably make a lot good portion of those videos from those pictures right now.
Oh, we could definitely do some animations. That'd be so awesome.
That's a lot of work.
So one of the things they mentioned yesterday, there was a hidden message in the parachute. And I didn't even know this. I must have missed that. But because when the parachute, like with most parachutes used in spaceflight, there are asymmetrical designs. Mm-hmm. And so that's, so you can pretty much, when you're watching a video, watching it live, like the engineers can pick out a point of the parachute and know exactly what point it is. And so I didn't think of it when they had the parachute going, but they said there was a hidden message. And apparently I would have never figured this one out, though. It sounds like something I would probably try to figure out. Each of the colors was like, it was in binary. So like the white parts of the parachute was zeros and the orange parts were ones, and you put that all together and you decode into like an ASCII characters. It turns into, it says, oh gosh, what's their motto?
So it says dare mighty things going from the inside ring out. And then the outer edge of the parachute gives the latitude and longitude for JPL.
That's right. Yeah, the outer ring's allowed to longitude. And then, yeah, dare mighty things is their motto. And it's all over JPL headquarters. It's inside the mission control room, and you can see it on live stream. And that came out. I'm like, of course they did that. Like, of course. Like,
they announced that, and everyone was like, oh, what?
Makes sense. So that's something JPL would do. Like, they put Braille on inside. I didn't know this until I did the research for the article. They put Braille that said JPL on Insight, on the Insight lander.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
And then, of course, the infamous JPL Morse code on the wheel of Opportunity. I think they also put that also on the other rovers as well. But I know that's not Opportunity, Curiosity. Just to mark their territory on Mars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're still getting stuff. We're going to see more and more photos. They said they took over like 20 some thousand photos during descent and landing.
Yep.
I think we're not even close to that. How many of that on the raw images file? So,
yeah.
Plus whatever they're doing, they took the first panoramic photo, the first sounds from the two microphones that's on there. They have the entry, descent, land, the EDL microphone, and then they have a scientific microphone on the mask. Both of those, I didn't. Maybe it's just my terrible hearing, which is terrible because I edit these podcasts, but I couldn't hear anything from the mask camera. Mask microphone. Like, I played it like 3-4 times, couldn't hear it. And it wasn't until they uploaded the edited version of the EDL microphone where they took out the buzzing from the rover. I could hear clear as day. Like, he played the audio of the EDL microphone on there. I just heard buzzing. He goes like, yep. And that 10 seconds in was a wind gust. And I go, I just heard buzzing.
Yeah.
But no, I'm happy they added the edited version without the buzzing, because I would never figure it out what was in that sound.
Yeah, luckily that's a very consistent buzz, so it's very easy just to go in software to remove it.
And they did say they were going to be using that now for diagnostic sounds in case, like, if a experiment starts running and they can hear it and make sure it sounds correct. Mm-hmm. which is something they haven't been able to do before, because these are the first two microphones that have ever landed on a space, well, ever, I think, used on a spacecraft. I don't think they've been.
Yeah, I think
other than Apollo, but I think these are the first two.
These are the first, like, true, like, diaphragm microphones, not like a seismograph that you can, like, kind of make fake audio out of. But the like actual acoustic microphones.
Yeah. And going on to kind of more news that popped up yesterday morning on the Today Show, the SpaceX mission, that's going to be the first all civilian. I think it's the first all civilian mission. They claim it was the first all civilian mission. Inspiration 4, their HOPE member was announced, which name was Haley Arsindo, I think how you pronounce it. She beat cancer growing up. I think at age 10, she got diagnosed with a type of bone cancer. And she ended up beating that as a kid. And she wanted to become an astronaut growing up. She had to beat cancer. She went through chemotherapy and ended up getting part of her femur removed as well. And so that pretty much put being an astronaut out of the question, at least what we all thought would be considered an astronaut. for many, many years. She ended up she's now a PA at St. Jude, physician assistant at St. Jude, helping kids beat cancer on their own and researching new ways to combat cancer. And she was announced as the first civilian other than Jacob Isaac. Isaac Dan, is that you pronounce his name?
Yeah, Isaacman.
Isaacman, that's right. So now we are up to two, and the next two would be announced end of this month.
So according to the Inspiration 4 website, at this time we're about five days to the next crew selection. And I believe this one should be are they doing both the Shift 4 and St. Jude donations at the same time?
He said that both would be done at the end of this month, so I'm assuming so. I know there's a whole bunch of like photographers that we know that are putting their photo their videos up for the shift for shop project, so that all ends up happening end of this month. Flight still supposed to happen this year. I'm super excited for this mission. Like, it's just going to be a great mission. Like, there's really like there's a whole bunch of like DM2 shouldn't have happened because of COVID, or like Crew One is like all this other stuff. It's just gonna be a great mission all around. Can't wait for it. Everyone's gonna be highly deserving of going on it. Who's picked? So that is happening this year and end of this month for the chosen of the second and third seat picks.
Yeah, I'm excited to see. It's like I'm kind of hoping someone from the Space Coast gets selected.
There's a lot of people from the Space Coast. I mean, like, I mean, I'm not sure how many people have just donated, but there's a lot of people who, like, I've followed for a while who are putting their videos out to be selected for the ship four. Be careful when you say that one too fast. Seat. So I'm super excited, especially a photographer. That'd be really cool to see a photographer get chosen.
Yeah. Because I always loved the picture Scott Kelly got when he was on the space station, and I've been sorely missing similar type shots, and so that's why I hope a photographer is one of the people who gets selected.
Mm-hmm. Also, we mentioned Boca Chica earlier in the show. Last week has been fairly quiet over down there in South Texas. Usually when we've done this show, there's been like, we could do a whole show just on what happens down in Texas. This last week's been quiet. They've been pouring like more cement on the landing pad, like expanding that out. Some work's been done in the orbital launch pad. They're building what looks to be, I don't even know what it is. Like there are two rings of like rebar. So first I thought it was going to be like massive locks, liquid oxygen and methane tanks. But now I'm thinking maybe it's concrete though, like I don't know. So yeah, that's kind of been the last week. Though this week they should be picking up. They had road closures set for yesterday, today, and tomorrow. I don't know they're still open today, but they're supposed to, for those are for stack fires of SN10.
And as of recording this, they haven't closed the road yet, but the closure is still scheduled.
Yeah, they hadn't closed it yesterday until I think it was like 1 or 2 p.m. So
yeah,
plenty of time still though for road closures, and those can get extended. Like any, like I think they extended it like a few hours yesterday as well. So, but FAA has given approval for the flight, which is leaps and bounds over SN9. Trying pretty much them playing like a big game of chicken back and forth.
Yep.
And Elon seems hopeful to have the flight this week. Yet, I mean, we've heard that over and over again. So my best guess would be next week if they do the static fire this week. And if the static fire is successful, which we still haven't had a single static fire needed for a flight. We've always had multiple static fires. So, but good signs are leading to this week having a static fire and next week maybe having a flight or end of this week. Who knows?
Yeah, the hardest part that they're having to try to nail right now is getting that Raptor startup sequence nailed. Full flow stage combustion engines, that is one of the hardest parts to get right. And that's what we've seen, the startup and shutdown of those engines to get them clean is just insanely difficult. And that's why we've seen them have to do multiple static fires, because they maybe when they spin up the pre-burners or something, they overpressure. It's these very tight tolerances they have to hit that if one of these things goes out, they have to abort the static fire. Or if they have a hard shutdown, that can destroy the turbo pump, the pre-burner. It can destroy all that. And we've seen that happen a couple of times.
Yeah. And I mean, these are probably one of the most complicated rocket engines ever developed by a company. I mean, the RS-25 might be able to compete with that a little bit. But yeah, these are just, I mean, Starship is like situated like Starship, the vehicle, like the design, like they're making tweaks to that continuously like they did with Falcon 9. But the engines are like still very not, I wouldn't say early in the development, but they're going through, I guess, like the terrible twos, or like maybe like the more like the rebellious teenager stage of development, where like, okay, like we've gotten this going, but like, just can you just work with us a little bit here?
Yeah, when it was SN9 had the one where they had like three static fires in one day.
Yeah, and then they ended up breaking two of them.
Yeah, with that last one, they had hard shutdowns. That was. I looked back at the timing when that happened, and I think the average time between those static fires was only like an hour or so,
which is insane. That's the first time I think they've ever done that. Publicly, at least. Maybe they've done that in McGregor.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's been a pretty busy week. Hopefully this week will probably equally be as busy for stuff that's going on. Appreciate everyone for listening to our show, Space Explored, the podcast. You can find us, of course, on anywhere you guys listen to podcasts, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, as well, anywhere you guys listen to the podcast as well. You can listen to it at spaceexplored.com. You can follow me at Seth Kirk, and Jared, you can follow you
at BaseRunner0723.
Awesome. And we'll see you guys all next week.
See ya.